exploration for the future teams. 12.1. Architects write code. If we start with the premise that all architects on our program write code, we start well. In software programs, we are accustomed to having enterprise, solution, or application architects. Often, those people do not sit with the project teams. Instead, they proclaim the architecture from afar, early in the program. That doesn't work in Agile or Lean programs. It doesn't work in other programs either, but we can discuss that later over a beverage of your choice. In an Agile or Lean program, the architect is responsible for the business value of the architecture, not for telling people what to do. The program architect does this in many ways. Balances the short-term goals with the overall system integrity, risk, expediency, technical debt, anything else that you would trade off short-term goals against. Sustains development against technical debt. For test systems, this is the age-old problem of testing versus automating the tests and how you automate the tests. I'm a huge fan of automate enough and refactor your way into what you need, because you may not know what you will need until you see how the system under development evolves. Write acceptance criteria for system qualities and quality scenarios for the product. Leads the definition of how a complex system is structured, organized, and implemented. Landing zones can help guide this effort. Works with a feature team in a hands-on way. No seagull architects. No PowerPoint architects. See Practices of an Agile Developer by Venkat Subramaniam and Andy Hunt for an excellent description of this. No profits, no police. Agile architects develop code and develop tests. Works with users, or with the program product owner on behalf of the users, to understand what the users do, how the users work, what the users understand and don't understand about the system. What is in the product vision? Revisit Develop the Program Vision in Section 4.5.1 for more information. Architects work with the entire project team, not alone. Architects work on all parts of the product, not just the challenging or interesting parts. In fact, if there are rote parts or boring parts, maybe that's where the architect is needed most to automate something so humans don't have to do it. In my workshops and in my executive briefings, I tell managers they should put their most talented people, aka architects, on the things that are agile or lean impediments. For complex programs, those are most often the build system and test automation. I suggest they use the architects for several iterations to make significant progress on those problems and get to some version of done. You may have different roles for your architect, especially if you are integrating commercial off-the-shelf or COTS software or vendor-supplied products. Act as editor-in-chief for architecture decisions on the team. Guide the individual feature team architects who do the actual work. Help establish new products that are based on the architecture. This means understanding reuse and establishing a vision for how the architecture slowly evolves as new products come and go. Can we harvest frameworks and products from what we have now? Help the business people understand and take advantage of the architecture for new system features, third-party integrations, and new product lines. The architect might use the product vision to discuss the relative value of features with product owners and the value of frameworks with feature teams. You can see that the people who have architecture responsibility shepherd the business value of the architecture. This is not the traditional, "I'll tell you how to build it because I know everything" position that way too many architects take. 12.2. Many developers become architects. If architects write code, and if everyone owns the code, and we get to the final product by refactoring, which is how Agile works, some substantial number of developers will work as architects at any given time. If your teams also pair or swarm over the code, no one will be able to tell who is the architect and who is not. That works quite well. You still may need a program architect who can discuss risks with the business people, especially on the core team. Tip. A program architect acts as a risk manager. She is experienced and able to talk with business and management with ease. She shepherds the business value of the architecture. In Avoid Hierarchical Titles from Section 7.6, I suggested you don't call a program architect a chief architect. You want the architect to identify with the program, not with the organization's hierarchy. When you use words such as chief, master, or uber, you create or reinforce a hierarchy. Architects may need to coach other developers, especially in how to create iterative and incremental designs, if they know how. 12.3. Encourage iterative and incremental architecture. Many developers and architects see the big picture of the architecture before they write any code. They know where they want to go, and they want to implement the entire feature now. That's not helpful in an agile and lean program. Instead, request that the architects collaborate on evolving the picture of the architecture over time. If they see that they have curlicue features, request that the architects collaborate with the teams to simplify the teams and the features. Sometimes this might mean that the teams realize they don't have a cross-functional team that can deliver value. When the teams realize this, they will agitate for change. Program managers and program architects are technical leaders who can help the teams reorganize themselves if necessary. Listen to Section 15.3, The Teams Have Dependencies on Other Teams, for an explanation of straight and curlicue features. I have yet to see an architecture last from initial design through the end of the program unchanged. Maybe you have. The risks of totally designing an architecture are too high for an agile and lean program. Help the architects learn how to create features iteratively and incrementally. Here's one way to think about iterative and incremental architecture and design. Assume you have a product with a three-tier architecture. People have a picture of the architecture, and while security pervades the product, the base security component is in the platform layer. As everyone creates features, it appears that the base security component is violating the principle of least surprise and the single responsibility principle. The principle of least surprise says that the product should act as the users expect it to. The single responsibility principle says that one component should do one thing and only one thing. Otherwise, you have coupling. This is a great time to refactor the code. Refactoring the code might not be sufficient when security violates two principles. And you might refactor and discover performance problems. It's time for iterating on the architecture. This chapter will describe several options in the following sections. No one could tell at the beginning of the program that security, as you planned it, would be a problem. The more the teams create features and refactor to patterns, the less likely the product will have a brittle architecture. With features first, everyone can contribute to the architecture. I recommend as part of the release criteria, the feature teams define any performance or reliability criteria for the product or a piece of the product. 12.4. Architects can help expose risks. Aside from iterative and incremental development, the program architect can help expose risks. Maybe it's worth the time for an architectural spike to learn about some area of the product. Back in Software is Learning, Not Construction, from Section 7.1, I said that we can learn about risks early to manage them. Some product features are quite difficult to refactor in. These include scalability, some performance issues, and reliability, to name just three. Don't proceed with just features when these quality attributes are critical to your product's success. One way to manage these risks is to verify your roadmap has a walking skeleton, also known as the tracer bullet approach, to developing features. When you show feature teams and product owners the walking skeleton, they will ask, how fast is this part? Or, how will this part scale from 300 to 30,000 users? You now understand their system qualities for performance or scalability. You can adjust the system qualities as you proceed. What if you need to know about some parts of the architecture first because they will drive other program trade-offs? You might. For example, in a smartphone, you might need to know the screen size because that will drive the COM and GUI decisions and the heat dissipation risks. There are several options for this kind of potential product problem. The solution you select might depend on the kind of product you have based on your product's complexity. Review Understand Your Product's Complexity from Section 2.2. Here are some options that might work for you. Do a pre-program research project. Bring together enough people or teams to prototype the architecture that those people believe will support the product you need. Once you have enough information, start the program. Develop an architectural roadmap integrated with the program roadmap so you create features and manage architectural risks as you proceed. Integrate architecture spikes with feature development. Maybe your program can still develop the operating system, the platform, and can answer other questions as you proceed. The larger the program, the more you want to see architectural problems early. You can't do that if you can't show the product working. What would it take for your program to show a walking skeleton of working product? That is the question your product owners and architects can answer. 12.5. What the program architect accomplishes daily. Architects lead by doing. Sometimes they do the hard work to pay down technical debt that's been accumulating for years. Sometimes they do the hard work of seeing how the features are evolving into an eventual framework, or two, or three. And when you have 200 or 300 or 400 people on a program all over the world working in two-week iterations, you may well need people who explore just ahead of feature teams so that the feature teams are free to develop features. There is a difference between Agile on a small program of about three teams and Agile on programs of more than 10 teams. Part of it is the communication paths. No matter how much you try to communicate, the larger program will have more communication issues just because there are more people. Coordinating the design and architecture among very large programs is a non-trivial task. It's partly managerial and partly technical. It's also social and communication work. Evolving the architecture is not a problem that a program can solve with hierarchy and maintain agility. And it is a difficult program to solve. Communities of practice can help. Consider these options for an architect's daily work. 1. Use an architectural Kanban based on the Agile roadmap. Decide what risks the architecture wants to address now and how. 2. Perform architectural spikes with a feature team. This helps a team learn how the architect thinks about problems and solutions. In addition, working with a team spreads the architecture knowledge so everyone can work better. 3. Lead and don't direct an architecture community of practice. What do you want people to know to evolve the architecture in a coherent way? What architecture problems do you want to raise? What do other people want to raise and address? 4. Provide direct coaching to people who want it. 5. Work with people and teams across the organization so they understand how to use the current architecture and how to evolve it. Your program architect might explore the boundaries of the current architecture and provide feedback to the program product owner. When it's time to change the boundaries, encourage the architect to work with the team, not alone. Everyone will benefit. See Martin Fowler's Who Needs an Architect for a wonderful description of what architects might and should not do in an Agile project. 12.6. Architecture is a social activity. Architecture is guidance that allows the feature teams to understand the general and, as the program proceeds, the more specific patterns and frameworks to use. We hope that things don't change once we understand where we are headed. However, because the feature teams make design decisions every day, we know that the architecture may have to adapt, if not change. The way the architects handle this change is with communications. Instead of thinking of the architects as the people who define the architecture, encourage the architect to socialize her concerns about architecture. The architect can use communities of practice to help explore alternatives. Work with a feature team to spike a feature with architectural implications. Ask and encourage people across the program to discuss architectural qualities as they create features. Assess risks and architecture as the feature teams create features. Manage those risks to create a coherent product. Ask, how did the code change? How did the tests change when discussing refactoring and an incremental approach to architecture? Ask, how will this scale from 300 to 300,000 users, especially if the product owner wants a different scaling than anyone expected? The program architect is a servant leader, coaching, influencing, and working across the program. The program architect learns from the teams and with the teams. The learning is not a one-way activity. 12.7. Problems you may encounter with architecture. What if your product owners want to fill your iterations with features and you don't have time to look ahead for architectural issues? Make your stories smaller. You have several problems here. You have the feature-itis problem. Some teams may not have transitioned to Agile well. Your architects may be PowerPoint architects. Feature-itis is an indication that a variety of people may not understand how to discuss business value. Does the program architect need to be part of the conversation about rank items in the roadmap or backlogs? Sometimes the architect can help the program product owner understand value better. Consider these options. 1. If you're using iterations, make sure that the iterations are no longer than 2 weeks. If they're already 2 weeks, reduce them to 1 week. That will have the effect of reducing your story size. When you reduce your story size, people will shriek and say, "We can't do that." But you will discover either the essence of the story or the team will swarm around the story. Either is fine. If the architect can help reduce the batch size, everyone can see how to evolve the product towards the eventual frameworks. 2. Make sure every team provides an updated picture of the product architecture. Use the small world networks to make sure every other team sees those pictures and agrees with them. 3. Ask the program architect to lead some architectural spikes to inform the product value team of the risks. These spikes will also inform the feature teams when it's time for them to work on those features. 4. Lead the effort to determine what an MVP is and how to create a minimum walking skeleton. Architects might have to work with the program manager to help create and use the small world networks. Architects might have to work with the product owner value team to help create small enough features or MVPs to show progress. Architects might work with feature teams to understand the risks of one alternative over another. Can your architects work as servant leaders, focusing on the business value of the architecture rather than on what they think the architecture requires? This might be a fundamental role change for your architects. When should you consider architectural stories? Sometimes the product owner needs to learn about trade-offs for the product. Sometimes the teams need someone to do an architectural spike to understand the risks and value of implementing one way or another. Consider the following when composing architectural stories. When you experiment, you have a specific learning goal in mind. You learn to manage the unknowns or risks. You might not want more feature development until you understand the trade-offs of different architectures or frameworks. This is different work than a story that starts as a developer or as an architect. When you have architectural stories or spikes, you have a specific learning goal that benefits someone, not just a developer or architect. The benefit is to the user. Do you want to learn about performance before you commit to a particular architecture or design? Your story might be something like this. As an experienced user, I want to know that my search completes in under 1 second. You might have tests that test a variety of search types, results return, and how the lookup works given one size of data and another size of data. Then the teams can explore because the product owner, maybe working with the architect, bounded the problem. Architectural stories are not the problem. Stories that do not deliver value are the problem. Make sure everyone understands the value of the deliverable. 12.8. Break the architecture with purpose. Sometimes the teams proceed through their work evolving the feature design and the overall architecture. The teams encounter a decision point. To quote Yogi Berra, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. People on the program might realize that to implement this feature, they need to break a current design pattern. They might realize that they have to trade off one architectural quality for another. Or they might decide that they need some exploration to understand cost or duration for some feature or feature set. It's time to explore some competing designs. Here are some options to consider. 1. Ask the program architect and at least one feature team to develop the question the program needs answered. Are you trying to trade off architectural qualities? Size, performance, or usability is three examples. 2. Start an architecture experiment. What happens if we try it this way as opposed to the current way we're doing it? 3. Consider competing designs from different feature teams. In each case, the program architect works with the team or teams to develop the answers the program needs. The program architect might lead the exploration as a servant leader. When I say competing designs from different feature teams, the idea is to evaluate the pros and cons of the designs, not the team deliverables. Certainly, do not compare the teams. Your program might decide to break the architecture. As long as they understand their goals, the questions they want to answer, and they time-box their work, they can create better architecture and design for your program. Ask the teams to manage the risks and report often on their progress. 12.9. Principles of Shepherd the Agile Architecture. 1. Integrate architecture into what each team does all the time. The principles are, the best architectures, requirements, and designs emerge from self-organizing teams, and decide the most responsible moment. 2. The larger the program and the more complex the product, the more you may have to consider some look-ahead exploration. The principles are, amplify learning, and build integrity in. 3. Expect the architecture to change. Ask the architects to learn from the feature teams as well as the feature teams learning from the architects. The principle is, continuous attention to technical excellence and good design enhances agility. Chapter 13. Solve Program Problems. As a program manager, you will have plenty of program problems to solve. You will also need to help teams identify their problems. As a servant leader, you will want to help people bring you bad news without feeling threatened or at risk. Let your teams know that you are there to help them with their obstacles, known or unknown, and not there to blame or punish them. Your teams will bring their problems to you earlier when you lead like this. 13.1. Ask for the problems or impediments first. When a team brings you a problem, ask these questions. What do you think is the cause of the problem? What have you tried already? Do you have impediments you need me, / the program team, / the core team, to remove? You don't have to ask these questions in this order. If your teams are anything like the people I've worked with in the past, they have an idea of what the problem is. They've tried some solutions. They need you to help in some way. Maybe they need some extra servers. Maybe you need a release/deployment team. Maybe it's something else. A caution. Never say, "Don't bring me a problem without a solution." That's a management trap and prevents you from discovering and fixing problems early when they might be manageable. You might need to help the team or teams do root cause analysis, conduct a retrospective, or brainstorm multiple options if they're stuck. Your job as a servant leader is to help unstick the team. Make it easy for people to bring you their concerns. Back in Continuous Integration and Testing Supports Collaboration from Section 7.7, I explain my guidelines for trying to manage problems and remove impediments. Here are some guidelines for the program team problems and impediments. 1. Ask for the result you want. 2. Assume each person understands his or her problem better than you do. Ask that person to explain it to you or to the program team. 3. Use the rule of three for each potential solution. Read Behind Closed Doors, Secrets of Great Management for more information on how to use this rule for management problems. 4. Ask the program team for help in generating the solutions to these problems. 5. Never impose a solution. If no one is willing to volunteer to try a solution, assume it's not reasonable. Go back to the drawing board. Some of the teams will need different initial solutions. Some teams will need help making their story smaller. Some teams will need help learning to swarm around their features so they finish features earlier in the iteration. That sets each team up for success for continuous integration. But those impediments might be just the tip of the iceberg for your teams. Once you start generating some options, you can start to see what the costs are and you can start comparing the value of those options. Encourage teams to experiment with their potential solutions, especially if your program is in the complex part of the Kinevan framework. You and the teams might not realize what the perfect solution is, if one even exists. Experimentation with measurement will help people realize what they might do to solve the problem. Revisit Invite People to Experiment from Section 7.9. 13.2. People on the core team don't deliver what they promise. When people on the core team don't deliver, they put the entire program at risk. You can explain this when you ask them for commitments, as in Beware of Forgetting Core Team Members from Section 3.2. Maybe you have someone too senior who can't commit to program-level work. Maybe you have someone too junior who doesn't have the ability to do the work or the influence to complete it. Use a one-on-one meeting so you can learn what is happening for that person at work and you can problem-solve together. Do not expect to solve a problem of people not delivering at a public meeting. Use your servant leadership empathy and awareness to solve this problem. You might need to help someone learn how to deliver. You might need to ask for someone different for your program team. You might need to have a conversation with that person's manager or yours to solve the problem. 13.3. Your product owners have featureitis. Featureitis is when product owners decide they only want to know about features. The product owner does not want to rank technical debt, defects, anything that might interrupt the flow of features. The problem is this. Unless you have a brand new product, you are bound to have technical debt in any number of areas and already existing defects that have been around for years. You can choose to ignore that work. You can tell the teams to ignore that work. When the teams address technical debt and defects, they fix things to make it easier for the team to work faster in the future. If your product owners want to ignore fixes, they will slow the team's momentum. If several product owners do this, your program can screech to a halt. What can you do instead? Make sure the stories that the product owners write with the teams are small. Sometimes product owners want to ignore fixing work because they think the teams gold plate the features. The smaller the story, the less likely anyone will gold plate. If your teams deliver stories into the product every day or so, the product owner can see if the team is gold plating. When the product owner trusts the team, the product owner can relax about the issue of ranking technical debt and defects. As for the teams, unless you have a reason to create technical debt, tell them you don't want them to. If you have a short-term deadline, maybe you can have some debt, but then decide when the team can pay the debt down. Teams should not be creating defects as they finish features. They need to get the feature to done. If teams can't do that, they need to understand what their problems are and address them. Product owners need to review the backlog of technical debt and defects in addition to features on the roadmap. Teams need a way to keep their code and tests healthy. Discuss the business value of every item in the backlog, not just features. 13.4. People on teams are multitasking. If you have people multitasking on your program and another project, your program will be delayed. You will incur a cost of delay that will affect when you can release the entire product. Teams need to learn how to manage support work in their Kanban or in their iterations. If product owners want a team to do more, the only way to do that is to make the stories smaller. With smaller stories, it's possible to finish and maintain a sustainable pace, a rhythm to your work. If teams have a ton of support work for a previously released product that is not part of this program, this is a risk to your program. You may have to address that with the people who want the support. Do you have people pulled off onto other projects? That is a sign of a management team who is not managing the project portfolio. If you are tracking run rate, this is a huge problem. Your program is paying, silently, for other project or program work. I have done these things in the past. 1. Measure the cost of delay so my managers understood why multitasking was a problem. 2. Ask the teams to shorten their iterations so they could only commit to a smaller number of stories. I asked them to track new stories that they had not committed to. I brought that data with me to the operations committee review meeting and explained why the program was late. This provided the transparency we needed. 3. Ask team members to come to me if anyone wanted them to do something not in the program. I would then take the request and assess it. You may have other options. Your first job is to make the multitasking transparent. Multitasking will slow your program and stop people from making progress. Don't allow it. 13.5. How to start a program with more people than you need. You're starting a program. Your organization recognizes you have a program. Your management team makes sure you have all the people you need right now, and your program is not ready for them. Your eventual 150 or 200-person program does not need more than a couple of 5 to 7-person teams right now, maybe even fewer. What do you do? Ask the people to self-organize into collocated cross-functional teams. If you're working on extensions to an already existing product, ask them to select a backlog of defects from the defect tracking system. Their job in the next 2 weeks is to, 1, fix the defects, and 2, determine what they do not have as a process or tools for proceeding for the program. If you're working on a brand new product, ask them to work on an already existing product with the same tools they'll be using for the new product. If they'll be working on a brand new product with brand new languages and tools, ask them to create the equivalent of Hello World with the new languages and tools. Maybe they discover they have technical debt in unit or system tests. That means the technical debt goes on the program backlog at the very top. Maybe they discover they don't have sufficient access to the build system or the version control system. Good to know now before they start on features. Or they will discover they need training or new machines or licenses for the new tools. Good to know before they start in earnest. Maybe they cannot create collocated cross-functional teams. They get to decide how to organize themselves or tell you or a project manager that they have a problem they need help solving. The idea is that at the end of the first 2-week iteration, you know where the initial set of team-based risks are. Every project and program has them. The larger the program, the more the risks hide, so Murphy can spring them on you just when you don't need them. When you have everyone, let all those people discover the risks for you. Now you have fodder for your risk list, and the teams know their impediments. Everyone wins. Paul Ellerby, a program manager, has the following suggestion. Consider a hackathon. I have had excess team members do a hackathon to start building automated test approaches and harnesses, prototype new ways of getting to the desired functionality, maybe start the continuous delivery pipeline. There are many things these folks can do to benefit the program. You could also do a Hudson Bay start on the program itself, as mentioned in my book, Manage It, Your Guide to Modern Pragmatic Project Management. But you almost certainly do not need all 200 people for that. Whatever you do, do not let all those people hamper the program's progress by starting on the program, unless you really can use them all. As part of this first iteration, ask the program product owner to build an agile roadmap and backlog. In my experience, too few program product owners are ready with an agile roadmap at the start of the program. But to not have any idea where you're going? Not good. If you start in with iteration zero, you can spend your life in iteration zero, iteration minus one, and so on. That's death for your program. I like to spend a day or so starting, but not much more. Even for large programs, people need to recognize the urgency of starting and delivering. Once the program product owner has the agile roadmap, all the product owners can work with this product owner to generate the first ranked backlog for all the teams. Now, at the end of the first iteration, the program has these deliverables. Everyone knows where they have technical debt in unit or system tests. Everyone knows if they have adequate tooling for working on the product. If they are geographically distributed, they know if they can communicate with each other. The program product owner has an agile roadmap. The product owners have ranked backlogs for their teams. The teams have practiced working together, releasing something. The core team has completed the program charter, so the teams now know what the program vision and release criteria are. Not shabby for 2 weeks, is it? 13.6 Principles of Solve Program Problems. 1. Make sure you know what's going on with the people on your program team. Use one-on-ones to solve problems privately. The principle is, face-to-face conversation is the most efficient and effective method of conveying information. 2. Do not start a program with more people than you can plan for at the beginning. Find a way for those people to contribute while you get ready. The principle is, build integrity in. 3. Make sure your program team can meet in person to learn how to work together. The principle is, face-to-face conversation is the most efficient and effective method of conveying information. Chapter 14. Integrating hardware into your program. When your product has more than software, it has mechanical or hardware components, you might not see how to use agile and lean approaches to see the product evolve and get feedback on it. You might not be able to use agile and lean externally for customers. You might only be able to use agile and lean internally to help create the best product possible. You can use the principles of agile and lean to see product and provide feedback using incremental design, integrating early, and seeing demonstrations of the entire product as early and often as possible. The only thing that's inherently sequential with non-software parts of a product is when they are ready for physical form. Every time the engineers create a physical form for a part, it costs money. That money is called non-recurring engineering, or NRE, expenses. NREs are part of your program's costs. You, as a program manager, might have to manage those costs as well as other costs you have. It's possible those costs are a risk for your program. 14.1. Hardware risks are different than software risks. Hardware and software product development both face common risks. We might not know how to solve the problem. We need more research before development. We might have to iterate to understand how best to solve the problem or problems. We need to obtain feedback often enough to know if we're solving the problems in a way that works. The risks associated with hardware are different than those associated with software. The problem with hardware is that the hardware cycles are not homogeneous. That is, the risks of mechanical work are on a different cycle than the risks of analog or digital work. The different kinds of hardware iterate with simulators at different times. They go to physical form at different times. One big question for your program is this: will you gain any benefit from early and often physical form for learning? The program will incur more cost. Is it worth the value? 14.2. Understand cost and value for hardware. Back in Software is Learning, Not Construction, from Section 7.1, I discussed the idea that software is learning, never construction. Much of hardware development is also learning. In addition to the learning, part of hardware development is being ready for manufacture, for fabrication of the final design. In highly complex hardware programs, design for manufacturing might be its own small program. Because we learn so much when we marry the software with the hardware, one question to ask is this: when is the right time to start developing physical prototypes? The prototype will have some cost. What is the value the program could receive from that learning? Often, the hardware and software teams use design by contract to determine what to do where, the interface between the hardware and software. The earlier the hardware people deliver prototypes, the faster the teams can learn if the design is correct. The teams shorten the feedback loops. Is that learning worth the cost of the prototype? One way to think about this value is to consider the cost of delay. How much longer will it take to finish the product if the software teams can't start until hardware is done? What if hardware has to revise their designs based on feedback from software? Here's an example of how to consider costs. Imagine you have one hardware team and three software teams, a relatively small program. What is the cost for you to wait until the ninth month of a 12-month program for a prototype? Maybe your prototypes cost $10,000 each. Assume you get two prototypes, one for the hardware team and one to share with the software teams, a total of $20,000. Let's assume you find at least two problems in the first week that create a one-week delay in your program. Assume people cost $75 per loaded labor hour. You have 16 people in the software teams and 5 people in the hardware team. That's a total of 21 times $75 times 40 for a one-week delay, $63,000. Compare that cost to iterating earlier on the hardware. I have no idea if you can create a prototype for $10,000. Your NREs might be much higher. It's possible that a chip could cost upwards of $1 million and take at minimum 6 weeks. In that case, see some alternatives in Manage Hardware Risks in Section 14.8. If you have a program of about 12 months, do you need to see a physical prototype before the last 3 months, a traditional time to prototype and then pilot? It depends on your risks. You will incur some form of cost, NRE, whenever you have hardware to go physical form. The question is this: what is the value of that physical form to the overall program? What are the risks of iterating in physical form? Remember, if you go to physical form earlier, you might be able to end the program earlier. That's because the product is sufficient as is. That doesn't happen often, but it does happen. 14.3. Understand each part's value. Let's assume you're developing a robot. The machine has mechanical arms, a custom board with the robot's operating system on it, and one FPGA, field programmable gate array, to customize the robot's use for you. You will have these engineering components for your robot program: mechanical work to create the arms, silicon board, operating system, FPGA. The software teams can create the operating system in an agile way because the operating system is all software. However, the operating system has interactions with the board, the FPGA, and how the arms work. The software teams can't wait until the mechanical and engineering teams complete their work. The software teams need to start work now. None of the components have much value by themselves. However, they have tremendous value when they all work together. The product roadmap will specify the relative value of each component. The teams need the roadmap to determine when to have each component and feature set of each component ready for the other teams. This is tricky. The teams need to deliver the most important and valuable components first. Figure 14.1 in the supplemental materials demonstrates what a first quarter roadmap might look like. My robot experience is quite old, so this is a fabricated roadmap. Because the mechanical, electrical, FPGA, and software can't integrate from the beginning, this roadmap looks a little like a Kanban with swim lanes. You might not like this roadmap. You might like to organize your roadmap in some other way. Here are the principles I used. Make the interdependencies transparent. Demonstrate the product as early as possible, even if it's via a breadboard. Notice that some of the basic hardware and mechanical work takes just 1 2-week iteration. If the product owner realizes that the work will take longer, maybe the people who make the parts the team expected to use no longer produce those parts, he or she would change the roadmap to show that delay. The roadmap makes the value visible. There will be feature sets you don't need at the start of the program. If the product owner and the teams work by value, it'll be easier to see when it's time to invest in physical form and when you can wait. 14.4. See the work. Sometimes the mechanical and electrical engineering teams can feel like a black hole to the rest of the organization. I've heard statements such as, "We're working on the keyboard. We'll have it for you in a couple of months." They might. My experience is what we get in a couple of months is the first prototype of several we need. That's not finished work. One way to see the work is to ask the engineers to use a Kanban board. I recommend each component have its own Kanban to see the work in progress. A mechanical engineering Kanban might look like Figure 14.2 in the supplemental materials. A silicon engineering Kanban might look like Figure 14.3. An FPGA Kanban might look like Figure 14.4. The FPGA Kanban might look much more like a regular software Kanban up until you make the decision to go to physical form. 14.5. Design incrementally and iteratively. Mechanical engineers and hardware engineers iterate on their designs. It's easy and inexpensive to iterate with simulators and emulators. Mechanical engineers use simulators to build and check their work. So do analog and digital engineers. They can use a simulator to walk step by step through their part of the product. If you ask the mechanical and electrical engineers to design iteratively and incrementally before they commit to physical form, you can then ask for continuous design review. 14.6. Use continuous design review. Mechanical and hardware engineers can use continuous integration for their work as they simulate. They can apply those principles of seeing feedback continuously with the rest of the program when they use continuous design review. In Encourage Iterative and Incremental Architecture, from Section 12.3, I suggested the teams evolve the picture of the architecture before finalizing their architectural decisions. Your software team might choose to have a design review of the architecture after three features. Read Manage It, Your Guide to Modern Pragmatic Project Management for a fuller discussion of implementing several features before selecting an architecture. You can do that for the hardware pieces of your product. Depending on how long the engineers expect the hardware efforts to take, you might ask them to review the designs every week or every other week if they work in two-week time boxes. As the engineers modify their original designs and determine what they can do in the mechanical or hardware parts of the product, they can explain their decisions to the software feature teams and/or architects. 14.7. Integrate hardware often. The cost of moving to physical form is high with mechanical and silicon components. However, if the program waits until the very end to marry all the components into a product, you will encounter the 90% done schedule game. That's where you have finished 90% of the work and have the other 90% remaining. The more integration points your program has, the easier it is to see the entire product, not just one component. Hardware and mechanical engineering are on different cycles from each other, and they are each different from software. Even with each discipline, the risks are different when the teams collaborate together on one deliverable and when the entire program has to collaborate to create a product. The engineering teams simulate to see problems in their own work and solve those problems. Each team is ready for integration at a different time. They can't integrate until they go to fabrication. That changes the feedback cycle or cycles for the entire program. Questions you can ask. Is there an interim physical form that would provide us value? How much does that form cost us to create? How long is it that prototype good for? If there is not an interim physical form that would provide us value, how can we obtain value and reduce risks with what kind of form or demonstration? Here are some sample problems you could test for and avoid with early prototypes. The footprint is too large / too small. The design by contract work you thought was good turns out to be wrong. You have a design that works, but doesn't produce the product you want. Those are examples. You may have other problems. 14.8. Manage hardware risks. Because the hardware parts run on different cycles than the software parts, we have at least two ways to manage these risks: set-based design and landing zones. In set-based design, the designers iterate on the design. As they proceed, they rule in or out designs that do not intersect with the rest of the design components. In landing zones, the designers discuss the parameters of what makes a successful design and then converge on that success. Both of these appear to be more like implement several features and see what architecture emerges rather than design up front. It's also about using the intelligence of an entire team. There's a third option. Is there a cost-effective way to make a prototype that can provide you with feedback without having all the properties? For example, can you use a 3D printer to check the physical footprint even if you can't check heat dissipation? I don't know if that would work for your program or would be a waste of time. I do know that 3D printing is much faster than going to fab for many parts of your product. I used a fourth option some years ago. We wanted to simulate the traffic on an internal network to see if the design we had would work. I asked about 20 people to meet the architect and me, I was the program manager, in a large conference room. We organized the people according to the types of traffic. We had a metronome to help people walk on time. We simulated the network traffic, what was going on where and when, with people. It wasn't a perfect test, and it told the architect a ton of information about how the software would work with the current hardware. I'm not sure we would do that now. We didn't have adequate simulators back then. At the time, it was a cheap and useful approach to help the architect realize that the hardware would not integrate with the software as he desired. These methods are not infallible. However, they all provide feedback faster and better than waiting till the end of the project or program when you've spent all the money and time and you still don't have hardware that works. 14.9. Develop the software before the hardware is available. I have seen many programs develop the hardware at the same time as the software or even in advance. The software and hardware people agree on designs in advance and write them down. This is a form of design by contract. However, there is another alternative, to develop the software before the hardware. One of my reviewers, Ian Brockbank, said it this way. For the last 12 years, I've worked for a company which develops audio chips, which have acquired more and more functionality over the years. We had an implicit assumption that the silicon was the most important part of the development, with software almost as an afterthought. After several projects where the software wasn't ready until a year or more after the silicon, and one program which ended up being canceled after 2 chips and 4 years of development because no one could use it without a major extra investment in software, which the company wasn't able to make, we finally recognized that in some cases there's much more work on the software side than the hardware side. We are now getting to the point of starting software development long before there is hardware available. One of the most important things to do to allow this is to have abstractions which can act sufficiently well to test the software in advance of the hardware. We use a range of abstractions with different levels of fidelity from a simple array through emulation libraries and simulators to FPGA instantiations of early versions of the chip, and we found you can do a lot with a very low fidelity abstraction. We've developed an advanced chip configuration package in the main using little more than an array behind a mocking layer for the communications. We develop advanced signal processing algorithms for embedded DSP cores with bit exact emulation libraries on the PC. Only once it works in emulation do we consider trying it against real hardware. Of course, this provides a provisional version of the software, which is only as good as the understanding of how the hardware works, so we always need to verify once the real hardware is available. Testing against FPGAs comes next. These allow us to test early versions / subsets of the chips against the software and allow the interfaces to be validated, debugged, and refined before committing to the expense of a full mask set and fabrication run. It does take work to allow silicon designs to be suitable for FPGA. The porting is a full-time role, even with suitable silicon designs, but it definitely pays for itself if it saves even a single respin, which can cost millions of dollars and, even worse, put the program back by months. Once the real silicon returns, there's still further verification work. The timing on FPGA is never exactly the same as the silicon, and there is analog performance to consider as well. But in my experience, even the simplest abstractions can cut out 80 to 90% of the dependence on real hardware during development and save months or even years on the project timeline. Ian Brockbank, Private Communication. Can you develop the software before the hardware? Is it a possibility for your program? What would have to be true for you to do so? 14.10. Principles of integrating hardware into your program. 1. Decide when it makes sense to move to physical form, early and often or later. The principle is, see the whole. 2. Encourage working product. The principle is, deliver early and often to satisfy the customer. 3. Encourage technical discussion of architecture and design. The principle is, continuous attention to technical excellence and good design enhances agility. Chapter 15. Troubleshooting Agile Team Issues. As a program manager, you will see many kinds of problems in the teams. Some of them are process problems. How can the team be better at Agile or Lean to deliver value better or faster? Sometimes the people on the teams don't know how to be a team or how to diagnose their team problems. You may see these problems, or you may have to ask the team to self-assess to see the problems. You can troubleshoot these problems. Remember, you are a servant leader. Grease the skids, eliminate the impediments, empower people to solve problems themselves. 15.1. The teams are not feature teams. I've seen component teams and single function teams attempt to work in an agile way. That might be better than what they did before, but it's not agile. Unless you release libraries, component teams do not ship running tested features. They need to organize along with several other component teams to release running tested features. If your product is libraries, you need component teams. Single function teams violate the agile tenet that the team is cross-functional and has all the roles it needs to finish features. Component teams and single function teams create interdependencies. If you have a ton of interdependency issues between teams, you might have the problem that teams are organized around architecture and not around features. Most of the component and single function teams I've seen are a legacy from the organization's waterfall days. How the heck are you going to create features and integrate a feature every day, working across the architecture instead of through it? That is a huge impediment. If you have component teams, it's even more important that they work on small stories. That's because the teams will have a difficult time getting the stories done through the architecture. Don't ask people to reorganize first. Instead, ask people to experiment. I have had good results asking people to experiment to see what works with self-organization, to pair, or to swarm. When you ask, explain why you recommend these alternatives. Multiple eyes on the code. Everyone works together to reduce WIP and move a feature across the board, and whatever results you want. 15.1.1. Ask the teams to experiment with self-organization around features. Explain to the teams that this is an experiment that we as an organization are running for the next X weeks. Make X be short, as in 1 or 2 weeks. The only measure of success is running tested features. Managers do not compare teams. If managers compare teams, the experiment will not work. This is an experiment that the organization is going to learn from. Some teams will have small and easy features. Some teams will not. This is not a competition. If anyone compares teams, the teams will game this measure and you will lose the learning. Stop multitasking. Get everyone to work on just one project at one time right now. I know this might be the most difficult thing your organization has ever tried. Ignore the fact you need experts everywhere. Assign people to only one project. Ask the component teams to self-organize as feature teams for now. No changing managers, no changing desks. They get to decide how. If you are a manager, no decreeing who is a feature team with whom. If you have single function teams, ask them to self-organize as feature teams for now. Ask the product owners to make the stories as small as they can make them, preferably 1 or 2 team days in size or less. Tell the teams that if they don't have the expert they need for a story, that's okay. They can pair, swarm, or mob together to get the story done, but they are not allowed to interrupt another team. Create an agile roadmap of the features you want in which internal release. The teams work in their backlog, or work in flow for this week or 2 weeks, not any longer, to see what happens when everyone works in feature teams of their own making and no one multitasks to get features done. Remember, this is an experiment. Have the teams do retrospectives themselves at the end of the short time box so you can see what happens. Managers might need to supply retrospective facilitators. Decide what to do next. This is an experiment. At the end of the experiment, ask the teams to assess the experiment using these questions. 1. What happened? 2. Were the experimental feature teams able to release features? 3. What happened to the